podcast brought to you by DTimeConfidential.com. On today's show, the devil causes havoc in Salem, Spencer confronts Nick on GH, Donna's heartbroken on B&B, and what is going on with the young and the restless. All this and much more on today's show, so stay tuned. Mike Jubinville, welcome.
Hello.
Joshua Baldwin, welcome.
What indeed is going on at the Young and the Restless? Hello, Luke.
I feel like that's sort of where we need to start.
It really is.
I got a text from you.
Oh, I was so mad.
Text from Joshua. I mean, I'm now starting to get angry at the Young and the Restless. B&B is now markedly better than the former Fine Wine. Nothing on Y&R makes sense. I would love to know what is really going on behind the scenes. Is anyone there paying attention?
And I know they are. Obviously, they are. And obviously, I don't know all of the dynamics that go on, but none of this makes sense. Why am I supposed to care about any of this? When did Lily become a character that only exists to prop up Billy? Like, I don't care. Amanda's family hadn't been on screen in months. And suddenly we're supposed to care that this man, who I thought was in prison, actually, suddenly comes back and we're all screaming and yelling and having Emmy scenes about things that don't matter.
What was funny is when he knocked on the door, I was like, who is that? I had to think about it for a minute.
Phyllis and Nick had a breakup that came out of nowhere, and we're supposed to be emotionally invested when Michelle Stafford gives her Emmy scene, and it was all great and wonderful, but it was based on nothing. Where did it come from?
Let's be honest. Who wouldn't want a relationship based on sex and video games? You could do a lot worse.
That is true.
I mean, the only thing you're missing from that combination is pizza, or if you're 420 friendly, some 420.
That is very
sex,
true.
Video games and pizza with 420. But if you're
when did
420 friendly.
When did they start arguing? It was like a week ago, and it came out. I just don't get it. I don't understand.
To be fair, nothing with relationships on The Young and the Restless, and this isn't to be fair because you're right, but like, it's not like this is out of the blue. I mean, it's been progressively falling or sinking or like drowning. I mean, everything on The Young and the Restless, well, I mean, I won't say everything because that's categorically, but nearly everything on The Young and the Restless is in some form, way, shape, or form out of left field. And none of the characters really feel like they're in character unless you get a Tracy moment.
Right. So I will give one positive thing, and I did send this out in a tweet. I thought Nikki and Adam's conversation was really good later in the week, when Nikki clearly is appreciating that Adam was there and supportive of Victoria, and they're still not like good with each other, but there's a growth there, and I thought, okay, there's a scene I can get behind. Mm-hmm. But everything else is like, again, I know I'm like a beating a dead horse here, but it's spaghetti against a wall. That didn't work. Okay, well, let's just do something else and pretend that didn't happen. I don't know.
My thing about it is I feel like this happens with The Young and the Restless. It's almost cyclical. Like at the beginning of the year, they'll have something that makes you really want to jump in. And it lasts for about 3 months. And then the rest of the year is bad. And we're getting down to that time of year where year-end lists and best and worst podcasts and all of that kind of stuff takes place. And I sometimes feel like while The Young and the Restless is consistently bad, the consistently bad sometimes will overshadow the markedly terrible that you get from some of the other soaps when we get to our year-end designations. So let me ask you guys then, what do you think is the state of The Young and the Restless today? I mean, not necessarily from the current storylines, but what has brought us to this point? How would you say the soap has done this year so far, Mike?
If I had to pick a worst for the year, this would definitely be my choice. I don't think that Y&R is doing spectacular with anything in general. Most of the things that are happening There's no dramatic heft to it, even though there's some dramatic aspects of things, like what's going on with Abby or the fact that Mariah was kidnapped. Oh. I mean, all that stuff was dramatic, but there's no drama behind it. Substance behind it. That's a good word. It just like comes up empty. Like when Nick and Phyllis were fighting, it seemed like to me that a month ago she said she found out that Jack was still had feelings for her. So now all of a sudden Nick is all insecure about it when he probably already knew that was the case. I mean, him and Jack are pretty close. And then when you watch their relationship deteriorate, it's based on nothing. All of a sudden they can't talk to each other. Nick has issues with Phyllis having problems with his family, which of course she does. She's always had problems with the Newmans, and that's never bothered Nick as much as it has like this week. And then the other part of it is, you know, even with Victoria and Ashlyn, there's no romance to their story. It's very bizarre. And I agree with Josh. Like this week I was really scratching my head, like what the hell happened to Lily? I mean, she's never been the most, you know, dynamic, overpowering character, but it's almost like she doesn't even have a brother with Devon anymore, or that she's even remotely connected to that baby that he's so invested in.
Let's pause on Lily for a second. Lily as a character outside of her relationships, her romantic relationships, has never been much of a character.
Correct.
I mean, even when her and Devon were younger, their storylines rarely were interwoven. Lily as a character is a great supporting character, but her entire popularity, or the majority of her popularity is based on the pairings that she's a part of, not her as an independent character. And so when you have her in a pairing with Billy, which is not any way, shape, or form nearly as interesting as her, well, I still like her with Daniel best, but as her previous pairings, it just, like, she's just there. I don't know what you guys are expecting for her to be some sort of dynamo character.
It's not that.
I don't think that's where I was going with that. What I meant was that Lily's presence was that she was always like somewhat more interacted. They've missed a lot of opportunities. She didn't get upset when she found out that Summer or Billy used Summer to get back at Phyllis. That didn't seem to bother her for more than a minute. She didn't seem to mind, Amanda didn't seem to mind.
Maybe her prison time gave her a new perspective on life.
Well, not it that did, they ever mentioned that.
Well, they could see, and that's where I thought they were going to be going, because she came out of prison empowered by what she had helped these other women do, and then it didn't go anywhere. And like Amanda doesn't hold her responsible for her twin's death.
They just,
and there was no drama. There's nothing there.
Oh, you killed my twin sister, la la la. It's like, what?
Now I'm gonna sleep with your brother anyway.
She had nothing to say about Devon spooging in a cup for Abby to knock up Mariah. There's places I can see that Young and the Restless can go. State of the show is an F. That's where it is. There is nothing positive happening on that show, but there is mess all around that they avoid.
Mm-hmm.
This show is about five. Michael used to say General Hospital was five steps from brilliance, which is a long way, because it was ungood. But Young and the Restless is, there's about five things that could turn this whole show around, and it's so clean and it's so happy and nothing is messy. And I just, why am I watching it? It's paint drying.
And it's hard to invest in Abby's pain of losing her husband when her husband hasn't been on for months.
Let me ask you this.
Almost a year.
If you could take any one character on The Young and the Restless today, could you tell me what their current character motivation is that is something that let me restate this. Could you identify something about the current characters from their history that is creating their motivation? Because what I observe, and maybe I'm wrong on this, is that so many of the Young and the Restless characters aren't their motivation, the depth of their angst or their issues is extremely shallow. And it's the Young and the Restless used to have so much history and everything was rooted in history and you understood the nuance because of what had happened with the rivalries and everything else in the past. Now you just sort of feel like you're watching a show who is like, doesn't have any roots. And or if they do, it's so shallow. Instead of going deep with your roots, it's wide and shallow. And those type of plants are easily uprooted.
If you watch this week, you would never know there was any animosity between Victor and Sharon and Nina and Cricket.
They all, yeah, ever. just like crying and hugging. And I'm like, do they even like each other?
Well, but that's part of the problem of them trying to bring
five
families that, together for a child that, and everything's a kumbaya when we all know the history is not kumbaya between 90% of those characters.
What did Trisha Cass do? Whose parking space did she take?
well, I'd say that about Melissa Ordway.
What oh, God love
she
Melissa
was
Ordway.
This week. Talking to a telephone while she's teleporting all over town.
What is she doing? What's happening? Why was that necessary? And he's not dead. We know. I mean, I don't know diddly, but he's not dead. Come on.
And that wedding ring looked pretty solid for having been an explosion.
It's
there
just
were no scuff marks. Is that what you're
nothing?
Saying?
Not even.
There's the direct deposit.
No scorching, no burning.
I'll
no
be
melting,
Jillian since
no.
she's not here. There's direct deposit. the kid. We're worrying about dust in the corner when the kitchen's on fire. That's not.
Well,
come on now.
Jillian will appreciate that you did that for her.
It's she will. It's a shame because it's still the best acting company in daytime. It's still, I would say, and I love my days.
I don't know
that
I would agree with that.
But I'm not saying that every actor is good. I'm saying that overall,
these are not new characters. These are not new characters. They're not new actors.
No. Luke,
I think, wait. I think that there is a vast, vast separation between sentimental favorites and recent additions on the Young and the Restless.
I agree with you.
You say company, that is not just the sentimental favorites with whom we have so much history, who you can have Michelle Stafford or Peter Bergman or any one of these characters who are getting the shittiest storyline on the planet, but it's can true. Salvage it because of the look or the glance that Jack gives Nikki, or the look or the glance that Phyllis gives Nick. That is a whole separate issue from the state of what is going on with the rest of the show. So when you say the best acting company, I don't agree with that.
I think, generationally speaking,
Young and the Restless is not the best.
No. Oh, no, they don't have the best teenage set. They don't have anything. I just think that the actors that have been there forever, that they're good, but even they can't tell the story. And Luke, what you said are these stories. And Luke, what you said earlier is so true. It's almost like because of so many off-screen stories, it's almost like this is the first few months of a new soap because they're having to tell us the backstories that we don't know. And it's like, but this show has been on for almost 50 years. Why aren't we playing on? We have so much history. There's so much history. And even the stuff that they've got on Canvas that works, they're not playing. Chloe, Sally, and Adam being in business together is a hoot. And it's good, but they don't play it enough.
Think about the history with Nina and her, you know, baby stealing. Wouldn't that be a fun thing to revisit with Abby? You know what I mean? Just there are things that you can touch upon to respect your history and kind of give it a modern twist.
I agree. It's just a mess. It's not a mess. How about that? It's not a mess, and it should be.
It's not a mess.
It's not a mess, and it should be.
It is a mess. It is a mess because of its lack of mess.
It is. And you watch Days, General Hospital, and The Bold and the Beautiful, and whether you like the stories, they're still messy. Even if you don't like them, you can't argue that there's not a mess going on. And it's like, in General Hospital, I have some issues with too, but still it's messy.
General Hospital is my first one to watch. Even as mad as I got about the culmination of Sonny and all the and Nixon Falls, General Hospital is still the first one that I watch.
I'm glad it is. The good performances, bad stories. I can't get over the fact that Sean, that all of this is a retcon.
Well, no, I mean that part. We will get to that, but let's first talk about the other soap that was mentioned in your text as to it being better.
It is
Young
better.
And the Restless. The Bold and the Beautiful. So before the podcast, we were talking about Donna and Eric. And if Donna wanted, after this last week, couldn't she just own Forrester Creations? Because on any planet, someone who has sex with the boss and then is fired attacked in the office would basically end up owning the business. But
to be fair, they just had finger licking loving.
Right. But if you did that, the whole premise of The Bold and Beautiful would collapse.
Oh, right. Did somebody fire off a gun in one of the offices somewhere?
Rick.
Wasn't that Rick? Yeah. Rick
did. Well, it's different. It's different when it's Rick. if it's family related. But like Donna is actually someone who Eric has a history with. She's not technically family, even though she's a sister of Brooke. She's not one of like the main Foresters. She could own Forrester Creations. It could be Donna's creations.
It could
heaven
be.
Help us all if that happened.
But let me just tell you, I need to give due where it needs to be given. Jennifer Garris did the damn thing this week. She, with those tears and getting upset when Eric was telling her that stuff, and then later on talking, I think, to Brooke or Katie about it, Jennifer Garris brought it this week. And I was impressed with that, even with as stupid as I think the whole storyline is. I was impressed. Again, this is an example. I don't love these stories, but they're messy. At least it's messy.
Yeah, and Quinn got her, trapped her with that chair and scared the bejesus out of her. And I
like, girl, Quinn will kill you.
Yes.
She will push you off a cliff. She will lock you in a sauna thing. She will stab you with Bill Spencer's sword. Be careful.
The thing with Quinn is, as much as she was demanding Eric do all these things for the respect of their sanctity of their marriage, she is the one that cheated. She is the one that took Eric's go have sex for free card. So her being all indignant about, yeah, it is hypocrisy, but it's so Quinn, isn't it?
So
for her
Quinn
to just go off the bender like that.
And Luke, this goes to what you were talking about with The Young and the Restless, that at least these characters are acting the way they're supposed to act. That whether you like the stories or not, this is how Quinn acts. This is how Shauna acts around Quinn. This is how Donna acts. This is how, I mean, Brooke and, I don't know when Brooke became Aunt Maggie, but that's what's happened. I'm not sure what's going on there. But Brooke and Deacon had a scene this week where you saw that look in Brooke's eyes where she was remembering the good she got from Deacon, and it was, saw it in their
based
eyes.
Based on both The Young and the Restless and The Bold and the Beautiful, you know that Deacon can lay pipe.
Woo-hoo-hoo-hoo. Do you remember that scene where he got Daniel on the phone and he had sex with Amber when he was listening? Woo! That was good.
I thought Bold did markedly better this week. Yeah. I mean, there was some messy stuff. Even with Steffi busting in on Hope and Finn and telling Hope to just back off her husband and her mother-in-law. I mean, there was some Steffi there. There was some fire there.
Yep. And Sheila and Deacon are gold. They're just gold together.
And I just like that Deacon's afraid of her.
Yeah. Deacon knows
is
not
it,
to
is it, is a Is it a fear and yet attraction?
I hope
no. I think he's generally, he has his own agenda. He wants Hope in his life, and he did admit to Brooke that he would like to find some common ground with her. But Sheila, he knows, will ruin that for him, and she won't leave him alone. So he's fallen into that trap. He's never going to be able to get out of it. I don't think Sheila scares him as much as he's wary of her. And he knows that she can derail what he wants from his daughter. That's what I think.
Well, last week we had a top five podcast. and so I want to circle back to some news that took place because I had to check social media to make sure that Smitty hit was okay.
Oh, poor one out. Poor Smitty.
Poor Smitty. Krista Allen has been cast in the role of Taylor. Thoughts, Josh?
Krista Allen was, God love her, was not good on Days of Our Lives as Billy. She had big shoes to fill from Rena. But, and I will not pretend that I have seen her act in a very long time, but after she was on Days, she was on a little show that was on for a couple of seasons on ABC called What About Brian? And I loved that show, and she was very, very good. And so I would like to see how she does. It looks like the makeover they're giving her, she looks a lot more like Taylor, but I don't know how she's not going to be Sex Kitten Taylor, because Krista Allen just oozes sex.
Well, but, I mean, not to put too fine of a point on it, but, like, Hunter Tyler was a bit of a sex kitten for On the Bold and the Beautiful back in the day.
Back in the day, but recent times, Taylor is not quite so much sex kitten.
Well, that's true.
As just crazed.
But I do vaguely remember some of that Billy period from Days of Our Lives when she was on. And I feel like at that point, am I remembering incorrectly to say that Billy was a little bit off at that time, too?
She was.
So maybe a little bit off Taylor is exactly what Krista's being brought on for.
Oh, I'm in. Because Taylor is sorely missed on screen. So I'm in, as long as, I mean, the concern always is that Brad's going to get bored.
Well, there's I mean, think about it. If Sheila's sticking around and interfering in Steffi's life, that could be
good. Not only that, but it might actually get Brooke out of this.
Oh my god!
Thing.
Yeah.
Oh god! It's just painful. I mean, Ridge has always been horrid, particularly under as they've written him as portrayed by Torsten Kay. But Brooke just being around, having nothing to do but nag and be self-righteous. I don't want to.
Catherine Kelly Lang be like, "It's COVID. I'm getting a paycheck. I'm just standing here."
She is, and she looks fabulous.
Don't make me get up within six. Thing. Don't make me get up within 6 feet of someone in order to slap them.
I would love to see her 6 feet closer to Deacon. I still think they're fire.
Yeah, I don't remember her having that much animosity for him, but I think it's her own self-protection. Maybe to keep Hope aware of Deacon's not so goodness, and it's probably her own self-protection because she remembered all of it. She has good flashbacks, I'll tell you that.
Oh, those were good flashbacks. Was she married to Ridge when she cheated with Deacon and got pregnant with Hope?
No, he was with Taylor.
Okay, I didn't know
and
who
wasn't
was.
Wasn't she with his brother, the blonde one?
I don't know that Thorn? She was. I don't know that she was with anybody. You're thinking of Thorn?
The guy who plays Maxie's biological father on
Nick.
General Hospital. Yeah.
Oh, Nick.
Wasn't she with Nick back in the day?
Yeah, she was.
During that period?
Nick was married to Bridget, right? And Brooke cheated with Nick, right? Is that not right?
No, Nick. Deacon was married to Bridget.
Right. That's what I'm thinking about.
Yes. So Brooke had sex with Deacon while he was married to Bridget.
Correct.
But then wasn't she technically with Nick at that time?
I don't think so, but I don't remember offhand. I'm not a B&B expert when it comes to history.
I am not. I am never going to claim that for myself. Nope.
I just knew that Brooke cheated with her daughter's husband.
I know that happened. It was just that I vaguely thought that there was some sort of connection between Brooke, Nick, Deacon. And so what you were talking about might have been what it was, is that Nick and Bridget might have been together.
It's possible. But give me this mess. Give me this mess. I don't love these storylines. They're not rooted in history a lot of the times, but give me this mess. And this past week,
I hate to say it because I've only been watching The Bold and the Beautiful since 2006-ish. So not as long as other people. I understand that if Jillian was here, I would get my head bitten off because I'm about to say something. But like, she would, because my point would be is The Bold and the Beautiful hasn't had deep roots in a very long time. It's been shallow, wide roots for a very long time. If Jillian was here, she would be like, no, no, no. Back in the day, there was tons of depth, but that predates me. But like
more of a problem with you saying roots and not roots.
Oh Lord.
ever since I've watched this show, it's just always come across as very superficial. The only time there was any heft or depth to it was Stephanie Forrester. And then when her mom came on to die. Other than that, it's just superficial.
Doing now is rooted in history. I mean, the Sheila Deacon stuff that them showing the background with Deacon and Brooke and even
I'm,
Donna.
What I'm
and
meaning
Eric.
By is the storylines. Yeah, like the day-to-day storylines at The Young and the Restless used to be deeply rooted. Now are the Bold and the Beautiful storylines without Sheila, which Sheila is a recent return, but over the past, say, 5 to 10 years, has been recycled storylines over and over and over. So there's no depth or whatever. They just give us good, memorable scenes every once in a while we can go back to it. But there's no real depth to anything at The Bold and the Beautiful.
No. Right.
And then maybe once a year they go to Europe and shoot on location, which no soap does anymore.
Right.
So it's pretty.
So, Mike, what did you think of the Krista Allen casting?
Oh, I'm excited. I don't know anything about her. I am excited that B&B took the initiative to approach Hunter Tyler about coming back and then decided that they needed the character more. I'm not going to deny that I've been saying that this role needed to be recast if she didn't want to do it. So, yeah, I'm on board.
I am too.
Very hopeful about what I saw this week. Just maybe a little bit more hopeful about some good coming up.
Well,
I agree.
The devil is not allowing for much hope in Salem.
That was good.
What did you guys think of the Halloween special, the Raising of the Dead?
I'll go first because Josh probably will talk more about it. I enjoyed it. I thought it was a great idea to have the zombies come back and torment the people that killed them. I liked the idea that Charlie killed Carmine and then darted off, and then Ava had to take the blame for it because who's going to believe that Charlie was really alive?
Right.
I thought that was pretty cool because that could have been a big mess, but it turned out in the end that they were able to kill the zombie, which I didn't know you could kill a zombie, but hey, whatever.
Have you not watched The Walking Dead?
No, I don't watch The Walking Dead. And, but then again, you know, I don't really believe the devil can possess somebody. So here we are not talking about reality. I thought it was fun. It was fun. And it looked like everybody was having fun doing it. Top of the list would be Deidre Hall. Looked like she's having a blast. I thought it was fun.
Deidre Hall in the devil outfit is quite fun.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, so good.
Josh. What did you think of the Halloween? Ron has been doing special Halloween events for years nowadays, but it just so happens that this one actually sort of fit into the existing storyline.
Yeah,
it's true. I had read before it aired that he was saying that for the first time, this wasn't going to be like a dream or a one-off. That it was actually going to fit into what was going on screen, which I thought was really cool. I will say that I was watching by myself, and I walked into the other room and said, Days of Our Lives has managed to weave undead zombie-like people into the storyline where it makes sense, and they're using history and flashbacks, and Young and the Restless can't manage to do it in real time with no demons.
And their version of a flashback is teleportation.
Oh God, it's so Mike Manning and Blake Barris and God love Vincent Irizarry for reprising that role.
I need David Hayward on General Hospital so bad. Can you imagine? Like, let's just pause for a moment and bask in the thought of Vincent Irizarry as David Hayward on General Hospital. First of all, him versus Dr. O would be wonderful. Him possibly having chemistry with Britt would also be wonderful.
Oh, yeah. Him, I agree with you.
On the show, possibly being the bad boy who Liz falls with could be wonderful.
Yep.
Him giving, causing problems with his drugs, or possibly like trying to go for the chief of staff, could be wonderful.
I agree.
David Hayward could easily come onto this show. We've had other people come on. Now, I'm going to say this, and I'm going to say this politely. Jennifer Bassey coming on as someone other than Marion Colby Chandler was not necessary.
Mm-mm.
Tad Martin, as much as I hate that character, coming on as Colonel Sanders.
Oh,
Colonel Sanders.
Is not necessary.
It hurts me. I'm physically in pain.
If you are going to bring someone from All My Children over, even if you just want to do it as a wink and a nod for a cameo like Jennifer Bassey.
It's true. And David, going back to David Hayward, David had a relationship with Alex, right? Anna's twin.
Yes.
And so and with Alex being,
he's met Anna and he's right. met Robin.
And with Alex being dead and Wahaha Peter being Alex's child, David Hayward would fit right on
Can
screen.
Can you imagine if David Hayward was the person who did Peter in?
Yes, that would be awesome.
It would almost make sense.
First of all, anything, just a big gust of wind would be great. But David Hayward...
Well, but the problem is that the gust of wind wouldn't do anything because he's whispering so loudly, he'd suck it all in and then spit it out.
It's so true. And he has 9 lives. No one can kill him. Not even Jason. Jason gave up his gun.
Right, right. The invincible Jason. We have finally found what it takes to beat the mob in Port Charles. A whisper. Whisper, Juilliard. Whisper, whisper. How dare you? How dare you?
Oh, it's bad.
It's
not good.
It's so bad.
It's not good.
I mean, we literally watched a thing where Peter got knocked out and the next by Jason, and the next moment, Peter is on top.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Peter always on top. Wahaha.
But before we get to that,
oh, we can go back to
Days. Talk about Days of Our Lives.
Yeah, I was going to say.
We got a little sidetracked there.
David Hayward sidetracked.
It was Vincent Irizarry.
Vincent Irizarry.
What did you guys think of Gwen's, of Chad, and I wanted to call her Katie, Abby. Chad and Abby learning the truth about Gwen's secret.
I loved it. I think she's an incredibly good actress, but when she's given that material where she gets to have a gotcha moment with somebody, she plays it so well. The energy that she has when she came in with Jack and Gwen and they're all lovey-dovey father or daughter thingy, and she's like, oh no, let's talk about it. I did this. I realized I felt very bad for it, but you did this, and here's this document now. How Kayla's not in prison, and how Chad and Abigail are not up on felony charges.
Wasn't Kayla just talking to John about HIPAA violations?
Yes, and Kayla.
Kayla doesn't want John listening to an audio clip because of HIPAA violations, and yet, I'm just saying.
And how the fuck long has that guy been dead that his office still has his stuff in it? Like,
maintenance would have cleared that out in a week.
Exactly. Box that shit up, but apparently not. It was an odd premise, but I liked the payoff. I thought the payoff with Chad and Abigail and Gwen and Jack was really good. And quite frankly, during that, it's like Emily O'Brien. It's suddenly I realize I'm like, she's become that character where she does bad things, but I don't want her to get caught. I root for her when I shouldn't. Slowly but surely, she has found her way into my soul in that way that Nicole used to. In that way, I'm not comparing her to Carly Tenney in that way, but I'm saying that Carly was a character that I cared about. Even though she did bad stuff, I didn't want her to get caught. Emily O'Brien has weaved a nice web with Gwen here, and the writing has been very, very good for her, I think.
Mike? I like her magic with Xander, too.
Ooh, yeah. But,
I was going to say, part of the reason that she's out is what helped us get and I'm not sure that we were actually, any of us were like purely invested, but there was also a wedding this week.
Oh, and Victor called Bonnie the dime store Dolly Parton. I thought that was awesome.
That's cute. Though, which is ironic, because isn't Dolly Parton the one who is also the one who takes a lot of money to look this cheap? Isn't that her line?
Yes, it is.
What did you think of Bonnie, the wedding, Victor finding out that more people got out than he intended?
I can love Wally Kurth and Judy Evans and Mary Beth Evans and Stephen Nichols and all of these players and still think this is just dumb. I love all these people, but there's nobody in town who's freaked out that Bonnie, who took Adrian's place and kept her in prison, and then all of this stuff is, I just, there's no, there. This is the one place on days where there's not enough mess. Everywhere else, there's mess everywhere, but like Sunny and I got irritated that they couldn't even mention his brother's names, that they said Sonny and his brothers. And I was like, what? Okay. There's just no mess here. Why is no one freaked out? Why is Victor the only one throwing shade at this? I don't get it. But that's the only, like, it's like a disjointed part from the show, mm-hmm. right? Like, it connected because they were in prison because of, Xander and Melinda and the shady judge, and so it connects. I just don't get it.
Mike, what did you think of that side of things?
I don't really, you know, I don't have any investment in Bonnie and Justin at all. I like Victor. Victor with the zingers is always amazing. I really haven't figured out. I like what they did with the Demira Mansion, but I'm more focused on you can't believe I'm gonna say this. I'm focused on that horrible living room.
So like
I agree with you, it hurts.
So I feel like, you know how Jillian says to be very specific?
Yeah.
Yep. I was very specific about the Demira Mansion, and I appreciate that they are no longer literally looking up each other's noses.
Oh, they have room to move.
They have room to move. But did that require, I mean, the set that the Kyriakises, have is, has more room in it, I mean, than the Demira Mansion used to. Mm-hmm. But did it require that we go back and find the absolute ugliest decorations and furniture entirely possible? The size of the space for the Kyriakis Mansion isn't bad. They had, like, it was a downgrade for the furniture.
One of our posters in the comments said it looked like a funeral home.
It does.
But let's be straight here. I completely agree with everything you're saying, but I think that's kind of how Maggie would decorate.
But because Maggie loves those little figurines, those tchotchkes. The way the house looked before looked like Maggie would decorate it.
Right.
They could have kept the exact same couch. They could have kept the exact same chairs, and they could have kept the fireplace behind it and then just made it a smaller room, and it wouldn't have been as glaring. But now you walk into it, it's so dark. I had not thought about the funeral home. Credit to whoever mentioned that. But, like, people walk in there, the colors are so dour, and the lighting combined with it, the soap opera lighting, does not do it any benefits.
It doesn't.
I just don't understand why we didn't take the Kyriakis, like, furniture and put it in whatever the new set is with the, because it had more white walls and the, like, lighter walls before. Why they didn't just use the new set with light walls again and put the same furniture in? They could have done that. That
it
wouldn't have
like
required.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Lou. Go ahead.
Well, it wouldn't have required them to keep the same set, is all I'm saying.
Yeah, it feels like they're also shooting it from a different angle. And I don't know. I don't know if you remember.
Well,
this.
I would guess. I don't know this, but my suspicion would be it would not surprise me if, behind the scenes, the sets were swapped. I'll bet you that the old Demira Mansion, or the new Demira Mansion, is the old Kyriakis set, and vice versa.
It's possible.
That, to me, in my mind, when I've looked at it, I'm like, okay, this set is about the exact same size as the old Demira Mansion. And so, like, I understand that they had to make those choices, and I understand why they did it. And I'm greatly appreciative that they redid the Demira Mansion. I just don't understand the color palette choices, the stuff in the Kyriakos mansion. It doesn't have to be that ugly. A different color of paint and the original couch and one chair doesn't take up that much room.
Yeah, I don't really understand what's going on there, but it does speak to the increased presence of Daemaeras and the decreased presence of Kyriakoses. Mm-hmm. And the busyness at the Daemaera mansion and the not so busyness at the Kyriakos mansion.
The thing about that is two things. First of all, if you include Xander in the Kyriakoses, he basically has his own set because they're in that hotel room all the time. So
or the Horton living room. Yeah.
Right. So the Kyriakoses still have the same presence. I mean, Brady is at a basic black all the time. So, I mean, it's not like the Kyriakoses aren't using sets. It's just that the way the Kyriakos family is so much more disjointed than the Daemaera family, yeah, they can get away with it. And so, like, I have no problem with the Kyriakos set being smaller. I just want it to be prettier.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not.
Now that we have had this moment in Daytime Confidential interior design and redecorating, let's talk a little bit about General Hospital. We sort of got sidetracked because of the fact that David Hayward needs to be in Port Charles. I just had an idea.
Go with it.
David Hayward and Ava with a Nick triangle. The wealthy darkening Cassadine versus a bad boy doctor. I would watch the hell out of that triangle.
I like it. I would want Ava with David.
Yeah. Right, right. That's the thing. Like, I've been a huge Nick and Ava fan, but if David Hayward was on and oh my God.
Yeah, to hell with Nicholas.
I have chills. Like, I have chills. David Hayward and Ava would Vincent Irizarry and Mora West in scenes.
So would we call them Hava? Hava?
No, that sounds way too close to Hayden.
Hayden, that's true.
I don't know how Dava. I don't. Dava? That doesn't work. That doesn't work either. But I now have my new ship. I need David Hayward. I need David Hayward. Sailed. Listen, if Tony Ann can go on and on about Ben and Sierra, and I appreciate that she loves them, but they don't drive a lot of story outside of their own little orbit. Where you know that David Hayward would, and Ava certainly does, I'm like, I have a ship. Plus, I haven't forgiven Tony Ann for dissing Adam Chandler.
Oh, Lord. Leave her alone.
We freed her from jail. You can stop that now.
You guys freed her, but, like, I still can't.
Luke, how did you – I mean, I know this goes back a little bit, but how did you feel about Vincent Irizarry being on Days this week? We didn't even ask you, and you love him.
My tweet when I watched that episode was, Vincent Irizarry on Days is a reminder of why he needs to be on General Hospital.
It's true. It is true. Although, I mean, I do, like, if it's just, he was just a poorly constructed character.
See, that's the thing. I didn't care for his character when he was on Days.
No.
I just like watching Vincent Irizarry on my screen.
I agree. And
so I will take him however I can get him. And since I can't get him back on Days, and we certainly don't want him back on The Young and the Restless.
Oh, Lord Jesus.
I need him on General Hospital as David Hayward.
He's gold. I mean, even as bad as Deimos Kyriakos was, as not a good character, he had chemistry. Vincent Irizarry had chemistry with Ari Zucker and with Lauren Coslow. He has chemistry with everybody. He's just a good actor.
I keep thinking about, I don't even know how this quad would work, but, like, Elizabeth, David, Ava, Nick.
Elizabeth, David.
I can just see the soap cover. And then you have Michael Easton on the other side of Rebecca Herbst.
Elizabeth,
So you basically have David Hayward in the middle of the cover. You have Mora West on his right, and you have Rebecca Herbst on his left, and then you have the other two men on the other side. Like, I need to write fan fiction, and I have not wanted to write fan fiction in forever, like years. The thought of David Hayward in that on that soap cover, I would.
The only thing that it screws up for me,
I am having hot flashes. And I know you not be having hot flashes.
I know you are
about soap characters
that don't exist,
right? That aren't on the show.
That aren't on the show.
That aren't even on the show.
The only thing that it screws up for me is this week. I want Elizabeth, Lizzie Beth. I want Lizzie Beth to have a torrid affair with Chase behind Finn's back. Elizabeth and Chase had chemistry to me. When he talked to her at the hospital, I was like, oh, I'd not thought about that before. Elizabeth
maybe
has
when Liz
dark,
comes back,
dark edges.
Maybe when they return Liz back to her normal state.
Oh, God, I know. They really need to. I mean, but that all of a sudden I thought there's organic chemistry. They don't even mean it to be happening. And there it is. Elizabeth and Chase, that could be interesting, and it would pit Finn and Chase against one another, and then you throw Brooklyn in there because she likes Chase, and Brooklyn versus Elizabeth could be really interesting.
Well, and Brooklyn has a history with Elizabeth, too, just because Brooklyn was with Nick at one point. See, here's the thing about this. If they want, now that Nick is going dark and Brooklyn is becoming more Tracy-like, there's the potential for revisiting Nick and Brooklyn.
I agree.
Having a, and like, here's what we do. Here's what we do. Ava and Nick are have their moment of happiness for a little bit. And then all of a sudden, Brooklyn comes back into Nick's life. And you start out with this triangle of Ava, Nick, and Brooklyn. And then this doctor, this dark and handsome doctor, comes to Port Charles. And for whatever reason, maybe it's to help Ava with some medical ailment or something. Or to, I don't know, we can come up with a reason.
They're going to help deprogram Drew or help do something.
Right. So all of a sudden, like initially, David is sort of interested in Elizabeth. And might have feelings for her, but then he's treating Ava. But as he's treating Ava, he starts to have feelings for Ava. Meanwhile, Brooklyn and Nick are over on the other side. Like, I could literally write this whole thing from Brooklyn, Nick, Ava, David, Liz, Finn. And if you want to throw in Chase, I'm sure we can have like a one night drunken thing at some point for Liz.
I would love
Chase.
That.
So we can even throw Chase in. Like, Chase can be standing behind Elizabeth on the cover. So it'd be Finn, Liz, Chase behind them, David, Ava, Nick, and Brooklyn.
Okay. Oh, and Spencer would have it. And then Spencer's on the side. I mean, I'm not on the cover, but I'm just thinking about Spencer. Spencer would
be. If Spencer was a little bit more mature.
Yeah.
Where they should go with it is Spencer and Brooklyn.
Ooh, that could be interesting, but I'm going to say this. Spencer and Trina this week,
they were my favorite.
They were magic. They were just magic. Like, my heart melts.
I love the way that Trina is not here for his games.
But she still likes him. When Spencer said, I know you don't trust me, but I trust you and I need someone to tell me the truth. Her eyes went down and looked back up and they were glassy eyed. And I was just like, oh, God, these two are just gold. We have magic in a bottle here. These two actors, Sidney Michaela and Nicholas Chavez, they're just stunningly good together.
Approved very, very quickly.
So here's the thing about that.
I mean, he was always good, but
he was good when he came on.
But he's way better,
Well, with Trina.
Oh, he was good with Nick. I thought him and his scenes with
Nick
were good.
This last week, I was like, I can't decide if it's wooden or if it's over the top, and I couldn't decide.
It's the first time
that I had that with him. When he has, how do I put this? He's better and quieter. Like, he's good at confrontation scenes, and he's great in those moments with Trina where it's just quiet between the two of them. But when he has the really big gusto scenes, he loses me a little. I still think he's really good. That's not a thing. It's just, I was watching him with Nick and I was like, This is a little bit much.
I'm also going to say, but
that also may have to do with the writing, because this is part of a retcon that I don't believe in.
Yeah,
and the retcon, right, like the entire time I'm watching these words coming out of Nick's mouth, who is literally one of my all-time favorite General Hospital characters, all I'm thinking is, not true, not true, yeah, not true,
happened.
Not true, not true, not true,
none
not true,
happened.
Not true, not true, not true, happened. Not true, not true. The entire time that they were fighting and the entire time that Sean and Spinelli were listening in on the conversation, everything, not true, not true,
oh, yeah,
not true. I mean, none of it.
None of it.
I just
true.
Can't believe that Sean, big strapping Sean, who is a hitman, has not just laid Nicholas out
well,
to the ground.
Well, he's a bad hitman. He's a bad hitman.
Listen,
I'm
the
sure
only
he
good
hit,
the only good hitman that is allowed on General Hospital is Jason.
Jason.
And we learned this week that the exception to that is the Whispering Wonder Peter, who can
Jesus.
Apparently take out the best hitman in New York.
Oh, you cannot. Are you going to have your brother's blood on your hands, Jason? Oh, Jesus. It hurts. It physically hurts.
Yeah, because he doesn't. I mean, Peter acts like Jason has feelings. Jason be like, I don't care. I don't know.
Right.
Jason's a bot.
And what did you guys think of the Drew element of Drew being there?
Whose parking space did Cameron Matheson take now? I don't really know. I mean, he's getting a paycheck, and I get it. I'm down with it. But and he's doing a great job. But what oh God, what in the name of Stefano DiMera is happening with all these people being
so
brain chipped?
What I was trying to figure out is
mind control.
I was watching and I was like, Dante and Sam are back in Port Charles with some sort of reason for them being back in Port Charles that had to do with their children,
yes,
rather than out on the island. And Dante is currently programmed.
Mm-hmm.
You would think, like, this is how much they are sacrificing countless characters at the altar of Peter.
Oh, yeah.
Dr. O can control Dante.
Yes.
Dante was on the island.
She's just a click a pen.
If you weren't going to make this so lopsided Peter wins using a brainwashed Drew, why don't you have a programmed Dante being there and having it be a face-off, potentially a three-way face-off? Dante versus Drew. Drew might beat Dante. Then Drew has to take on Jason. Jason wins. I mean, that would actually make sort of sense.
Except when you say it all out loud, you're like, what? Like,
well, that's not any... Listen, when it comes to brain chips and that kind of stuff, Mr. Stefano DiMera...
That's why,
like,
I said that, but that's why I said that. I mean, I'm not saying... Of course, this is... I'm not saying it's not General Hospital, but it, like... I tweeted this week, kudos to Days, because if you're going to go there, go all the way there. I feel the same way about General Hospital. If you're going to play mind control and break, go all the way there. Go all the way there. Like you said, have Dante be activated. Have Drew be activated. Have them going at it. Have them have a big freaking mess. Go there. But don't just, you can't do brain, you can't do mind control and then sort of play
not
with
it.
Yeah, it's like, do it.
Because we still don't know what Drew is supposed to do, right? I mean,
yeah, I'm not really
do
sure.
Do we know
what
he's programmed to do?
No, because
no,
Peter said...
He's not being programmed to do something specific. He's
right.
programmed to be activated to take orders. He's basically a programmed henchman.
Right. Good Peter Lord. Said okay. He'll do whatever his job is supposed to be, and he hadn't given him a job yet.
Right. His job is basically just to follow Peter's orders.
He's
I mean, the
drone.
Way that, right. The way this is working is they're giving a programming for the reason where Jason... had a brain injury, they just programmed Drew.
I had a thought this week. I thought about you. I had several thoughts this week, but I had a thought about you this week, Luke, when I was watching Spencer with Nicholas and then watching the brain control, mind control stuff that was happening. I thought Helena freaking Cassidyne is rolling over in her damn grave, because first of all, Spencer is wearing a wire to catch Nicholas in something. Cassidynes don't
Never.
Do that. Cassidyne, do not do that.
That is the thing.
Yeah.
I appreciate the fact that the Cassadines have a presence, but these Cassadines are not Cassadines.
No,
these Cassadines are watered down. Like, now that Valentine is back to being a Cassadine.
Yet another watered down Cassadine.
Right. He's watered down. Nick has been watered down. Spencer is a little bit watered down. I mean, Spencer is a person who was like tried to help hijack the nurse's ball. And this kid is wearing a wire?
Yeah, he would never do that. Spencer would never.
No.
That and then the mind control stuff. I just thought Helena would be like, look, let me show you better than I can tell you.
Do I need to take you into the pit where your uncle
or exactly.
your grandfather, I guess it's grandfather. Exactly. Where your grandfather, I mean,
it was,
can you imagine? Yeah, you know, Robert Kelker Kelly could also come back to Port Charles.
That kid's straight.
And can you imagine if Spencer had a little bit of like bonded with his grandfather?
I wouldn't mind him bonding with Victor.
But that's right? What I said in the last discussion podcast, and I got shot down because to me, Spencer and Victor are an obvious path to making Spencer more Cassadine-ist.
I agree with you that could be the dark versus not so dark choice he has to make if Victor's actually in town. I don't know if there's any plans to bring Charles Shaughnessy back to Port Charles, but I mean, like for an extended
period.
Yeah, but that would be like if you had Nicholas and Victor fighting.
Did Nicholas even have like Victor's in town, and does Nicholas even know?
I don't think so. I mean, I don't know, but I don't think so. They haven't played it like that.
If I found out that Victor Cassadine was alive, I would not be meeting my son on a pier to talk about a woman who's not dead.
No.
I would be going and being like, this is the person who basically, well, because Valentine was trying to take away the stuff, but turns out Victor's pulling the strings. Nick doesn't know that yet, but when are you going to find out if they don't ever interact?
It's true. I don't get it. I don't understand. Like it may, but again, I don't know what their plans are for Charles Shaughnessy, but that seems like a no brainer.
It seems like there would be a lot more drama or stuff to act upon if, God forbid, all the Cassadines were in one house.
Oh, that would be, it would be, like this, the quarter this is the perfect time for a Luke thing with all of them being in one house.
We don't need Valentine in the house.
Well, no, I don't really need
that. No, he's over at the quarter
He's a lame Cassadine. But Victor at Cassadine Island? Hell yeah.
Let me ask this question because I brought this up to Michael before the podcast and I want to hear what you think. I was watching the last few days this morning and the thought occurred to me, I think I'm supposed to care about Anna and Valentine, and I don't. Oh. Like, I kind of want to fast forward the scenes, and it's not that I don't love James Patrick Stewart and I don't love Fenella Hughes. I love both of them, but I kind of don't care.
Let me be blunt.
Please do.
The only man who I care about when it comes to Anna is Robert. I don't give a flying fuck about Finn. I don't give a flying fuck about Valentine. The only person who I care about when it comes to Anna is Robert.
Until that happens,
I'm going to just love Fenella Hughes for being the amazing goddess that she is.
I agree.
And I'm going to ignore whatever romantic entanglements Anna has. But until Anna is back with Robert, I don't give a flying fuck.
And can they get her? I love Robert and Olivia as friends, but no. Stop with the kissing. Stop with all that. That's no. Olivia and Austin, however, have chemistry. Like, get Anna and Robert back together. I'm with you. Olivia and Austin have chemistry. I'm down with that.
At least that would get him out of Maxie's realm.
Oh, my God. Oh, Jesus. Although, and I would put Valentine, I know you've got, there's lots of people Brooklyn can be with. Valentine and Brooklyn are kind of gold. They're intriguing to me.
I feel like Valentine and Brooklyn could be the next Cass and Felicia. They don't need to be romantic to do well in scenes. Whatever it is that they're, because they haven't had anything romantic since the one night stand, right? So every dynamic that they have has sort of been them getting to know each other and sort of respecting each other.
Right.
Once he's betrayed by her and finds out, then that's going to change the dynamic. But that's not something that can't be overcome. I do not need Brooklyn. Brooklyn and Valentine is pointless. Brooklyn and Nick, revisiting that as a triangle with Ava after Ava and Nick have had a little bit of happy time, I'm on board for that. But Valentine? Why? I'd rather see him go back with Nina. I'm not a big Nina fan, but I'd rather see him go back with Nina.
Well, I just, I don't know that, like I said, I mean, I don't know that it's romantic, but I just like, I like James Patrick Stewart and Amanda Seton together. They have magic together. They don't have to, it doesn't have to be romantic. They could be, like you said, Cass and Felicia were romantic when they first started, and then they merged into friends.
Like, that's why I'm saying they had their, Brooklyn and Valentine had their one night stand. That can be enough. And then they can
And Valentine should have each other's backs. They should know that each other is scheming. They should sort of support each other in schemes. They should help each other out. They should be buddies. I agree with that. But so they should be in each other's orbits.
Here's how I would do that. I don't want them together long term. But before he finds out the truth, they need to have sex one more time and her get pregnant again. And then when he finds out the truth about the first child and then that she's pregnant and maybe she also sleeps with Chase. So maybe it's a who's a daddy.
Yeah.
But once he finds out that there's a possibility that the child could be his again, one of two things happens. First of all, he has not forgiven her for the first child and they go to war. That could be option one. Or option two is, they have a lesser of a war, but it ends up being one of those things where because he's now the father of a Quartermain baby, he's not going to be doing the hostile takeover element that he had in the past. It becomes more of, I'm doing this for my child's legacy, and that's when you transition them fully into Cass and Felicia.
Yeah, and I can see that. But see, and where I was hoping they were going to go, which they're not, is I wanted Brooklyn to be so irritated, so angry at Ned and company that she helped Valentine take over ELQ, but then was going to sort of swindle him behind his back and try to get control of it for herself. Or they were fighting each other while they were trying to fight the quarter. I think that they just need to be messy. Brooklyn and Valentine are messy. And
I don't think that we need to waste that much time on mess with Valentine. There are other cast and actors who can generate way more mess than Valentine does. He is a limp noodle of a character. He is improved, but he's still a limp noodle of a character.
Okay. I don't feel as strongly about that as you do, but I can see what you're saying. Because you love the Cassadine so much.
No way, shape, or form is worthy of the Cassadine name.
He's not.
And the fact that he now has it again. Charles Shaughnessy, listen. Valentine has been on this show for how many years and has never felt like a Cassadine? Charles Shaughnessy comes in as Victor Cassadine for less than a year, and it feels like a Cassadine.
You're right.
I mean, there is no reason why Valentine still needs to be a Cassadine. He can just be someone like Jax has whatever those Jax issues are. He can just be the new Jax. He can just be the new Jax. He can be the corporate raider type in Port Charles, and Jax can go surf in Hawaii or something. I don't know. But, like, Valentine can just be the new corporate raider in town, buying up companies here and there and causing havoc without him needing to be a Cassadine.
Yeah, I don't really know what the point of him being a Cassadine is.
There is no point! On that note, we would encourage you to comment on this episode at DaytimeConfidential.com. Follow us on Twitter, Twitter.com/DCConfidential. Like us on Facebook, Facebook.com/DCConfidential. You can find me on Twitter at Luke_Kerr. Mike is at MPJ24 and Josh is at DrJoshua09. We thank you for listening. Until next time, so long.
So long.
Now that Krista Allen is Taylor, she can't be cast as Hope. We need Noelle Beck as Hope. Sierra needs her mama. Get Hope back on canvas. Noelle Beck.
Bye.
Ha 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 ha!